And Americans are on a gun-buying spree, apparently. Sales spiked during the first months of this pandemic, according to data from the FBI's background check system. In Ohio, the FBI's National Instant Criminal Background Check System recorded its second highest statewide tally since 1998. At the same time, homicides are up nationwide. Cities, including New York and Chicago, have reported a spike in violent crime, and here in Cincinnati, we're on pace for a record number of homicides this year. Some researchers are seeing a link. A team of researchers led by Julia Schleimer at the University of California, Davis, and the University of California Firearm Violence Research Center found a massive increase in gun buying during the first half of the year. They analyzed fatal and non-fatal firearm injury data from January of 2018 through May of 2020 and compared it with the 2.1 million extra firearms purchased earlier in 2020. They estimated gun violence increased nearly 8% from March through May because of gun buying. Julia Schleimer joins us now on the phone to talk about that research. Julia, thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And we had some connectivity issues prior to going on, so I didn't get a chance to talk. I just want to make sure I've got your last name right. Is it Schleimer?
It is.
Okay, perfect. And again, from UC Davis, I want to note again what your research found, Julia. You write in the report, we estimate that there were 2.1 million excess firearm purchases from March through May of 2020. That's a 64.3 increase over what you refer to as expected volume. There was an increase of 644.4 excess purchases per 100,000 people in the population. And then you go on to estimate a relative rate of death and injury from firearm violence of 1.015 for every 100 excess purchases per 100,000. Now, that's a lot of data for me to read to our listeners. Let's talk a little bit about how this research was conducted.
Right. Yes. So I think you summarized it perfectly. Those are the main points. Basically, what we did is we used the FBI's National Instant Criminal Background Check System as a proxy for firearm purchasing. And we used these monthly state-level NICS background check data specific to firearm purchase transactions for each state. And based on historical state-specific purchasing patterns, we were able to estimate what would be expected in March through May under normal circumstances. And then we compared the observed purchasing behavior to what we had predicted. And that's how we calculated this excess, this 2.1 million excess purchases or transactions nationwide in this three-month period. And the increase, the surge in purchasing, was not uniform across states. So some states had bigger increases or smaller increases. And because of this variation, we were able to correlate or associate the change in purchasing within states to changes in firearm violence within states. And as you said, we found an association that translated to an increase of almost 8% in firearm injuries and deaths over the three-month period linked to this excess in purchasing.
I think it's important that I note that you note, you and your fellow researchers who produced this document, that this study doesn't prove causality. And that's coming at a time where we've got a lot of stuff going on in this country. We've got this pandemic going on, of course, but there's also social upheaval related to racial injustice and political issues as well. So can you talk a little bit about how those external factors may have played a role in motivating folks to go out and purchase guns that they may not have otherwise bought?
Right. That's a great question. So jumping back to your first point about causation and correlation, this is an observational research study, and we can't infer a causal relationship between purchasing and firearm violence. But we did attempt to control or adjust for a number of factors that we think might confound the association. And, you know, there's a lot of factors that are changing right now in the world. We know this because we're all living through it. And so in order to try and isolate that correlation between purchasing and violence from all of these other factors, we controlled for a range of variables, including the burden of coronavirus cases and deaths, stay-at-home orders, social distancing, and temperature and precipitation, and any effects that would be common to all states, any temporal effects that would be common to all states. And in terms of how the current climate might be motivating people to buy firearms or act in a way, as you said, that they might not otherwise, I think that we still don't have good data on that. Our team is currently, we just fielded a survey. It's California specific, but it's going to attempt to answer some of those questions in terms of who specifically is buying firearms right now. Why are they buying them? Is this the first time they've bought a firearm? Questions like that. So hopefully we'll have some more information soon, but I think it's certainly plausible, and news reports, media reports have suggested this, that there's a real collective anxiety and fear in the country right now. And I think that is probably contributing, at least in part, to the surge in firearm purchases that we've seen. And I think this is somewhat unique potentially to the current time, wherein it's been speculated that prior surges in purchasing, which have been observed after mass shootings or significant political events such as elections, it's been speculated that those are driven perhaps more by a concern for increases in firearm regulation rather than concern for personal safety and self-protection.
And so, Julie, I think you just said that you've got a survey out now that's California specific, but does that indicate that there's going to be some follow-up data released?
Yes, absolutely. We are currently working on analyzing that data, and we hope to have something out very soon.
And I want to note that the document that was produced by this research does include these words: the pandemic has exacerbated factors that contribute to interpersonal violence, including financial stress, tension, trauma, worry, and a sense of hopelessness. Fear and scapegoating associated with COVID-19 may increase hate crimes. Violence at home might increase if stay-at-home orders increase contact between persons in violent relationships, including intimate partners, children, and vulnerable elders. These are all themes we've explored in various segments on this very program. It's such a strange time. And, you know, for you to be able to pinpoint what's happening in relation to gun purchasing and what the results might be, it seems like quite a task. But I think it's important that we emphasize, based on the research that you conducted, Julia, all of those guns, 2.1 million excess firearm purchases, your point is that it reflects an increase of 776 fatal and non-fatal injuries over the number that otherwise would have been expected had there been no increase in purchasing. Can you talk about how your team found all of those shootings? And I mean, are you combing through news reports? Are you calling all the police departments?
Thankfully, we are not the ones doing that. It is quite a task, but thankfully others are. So there is an organization, a nonprofit organization called the Gun Violence Archive. And they, since about 2013 or 2014, have been doing exactly what you described, combing through incidents reported by law enforcement, the media, government and commercial sources, to try and create a real-time data source on non-fatal and fatal firearm violence in the country. And this is the only near real-time data source on gun violence that we're aware of. And it's been used in some prior research, and it's shown to provide a relatively good estimate of, when we compare it to official numbers. That's how we got these estimates of firearm violence.
And we are talking to Julia Schleimer, a researcher at the University of California, Davis, and the Violence Prevention Research Program. We're talking about a new report that came out from that team of researchers related to a spike in gun sales and its relationship to hundreds of fatal and non-fatal gun situations. And Julia, a term that I think many of us learned for the first time when the pandemic really got rolling and is now part of our everyday lexicon, is social distancing. And you do reference social distancing in this research that you conducted. Can you talk about what you all believed or found to be the role of social distancing in these violent acts?
Mm-hmm. Great question. So I will say up front that we didn't analyze social distancing as our, key exposure of interest here. So at this point in our research, although we're going to look at it as a key factor, but at this point in what we've published, It's more as a control variable, something to adjust for. But we wanted to adjust for it because we think that it could affect violence in a number of ways. And we think that that depends on the type of violence we're talking about. So in terms of domestic violence or violence at home, social distancing may increase risk for some folks, as you referenced earlier. Being at home, you know, in close quarters for long periods of time with all of the excess stress that is related to the pandemic in general could increase risk of domestic or intimate partner violence. At the same time, social distancing could plausibly contribute to a reduction in violence in public if fewer people are out in public or there are fewer, potential
witnesses.
Witnesses, and exactly. And so there are a number of roles that social distancing could play in the pandemic-related increase in firearm violence that we're seeing. And as I mentioned, in future research and in our update that we're working on, we're going to try and look at whether there is an interaction between excess purchasing and firearm violence and social distancing. So at times when social distancing is at its height, do we see a different sort of relationship between firearm purchasing and firearm violence compared to at times when social distancing has started to wane? So we're going to be looking at that in a bit more detail.
Julia, we're using the term excess purchase, and I probably should have asked this a little earlier in our conversation, but is there something special about that terminology?
It's pretty simple. It's just the observed purchasing behavior or the rate per population minus the expected rate that we generated. So it is just a difference. It's an excess.
So you're looking at like what amount of guns the American public might have purchased in March of 2019 compared to March of 2020 and just doing some subtraction?
It's similar to that, yes. So we're not actually subtracting from the same time last year, but we're using historical data from several years past to forecast or predict what we would expect, taking into account seasonal and secular trends and each state's historical purchasing patterns to predict what we would see in, you know, March, April, and May of 2020, and then comparing the actual observed behavior and taking the difference.
And again, we're talking with Julia Schleimer, a research data analyst at the University of California, Davis Violence Prevention Research Program. We're talking about 2.1 million excess gun purchases in March, April, and May of this year. And I thought it was interesting that nearly half of those happened in March. And when I think back to March, which sometimes seems so long ago, but when you think about when we really started to realize that things were about to change here in this country, it was like the middle of the month. But you estimate, based on the research that you and your team conducted, that of that 2.1 million, 947,788 excess purchases took place in March. And I know you're careful not to draw any conclusions that can't be supported by the data that you're collecting, but is there anything to be taken from that, like certain feelings that the populace must have been experiencing?
Right. That's a good question. And again, I think that there are a number of factors that could be associated with March being this beginning of the surge that we see, the onset of the excess purchasing. And it is really the time in which the pandemic took hold in a meaningful way in the U.S. So it's when cases really started to rise. I believe there were, you know, declarations of national emergencies or state emergencies. And it is when several states enacted statewide stay-at-home orders. And so I think it was the beginning of our collective realization of, you know, this is really serious. There's something that's really changing the nature of life here in the U.S. And it was also when, downstream effects of some of the measures of that were enacted to try to mitigate the spread of the pandemic started to be realized. So I'm thinking about unemployment and things of that nature. So, again, there were a lot of changes, all sort of related to the pandemic that were happening in March that could have contributed to March being the time at which we saw the increase in purchasing happened. But I will note that we haven't published this yet. We're working on an update, as I mentioned. We have seen purchasing remain high, and in some states even increase higher in subsequent months compared to March. So that also suggests that there are several contributing factors to, you know, motivating people to go out and buy firearms.
The study lends support to interventions restricting access to firearms. That's a direct reference to what's published in this research. And it goes on to say the findings are consistent with individual and household level studies that have resulted in recommendations to screen for firearm ownership in healthcare settings to support safer firearm use and storage and address contributing risk factors for violence. Can you expand upon that?
Yes, exactly. So our most direct conclusion from this research, which is not conclusive, again, because this is observational research and we're working with a relatively short period of observation here, but it's that limiting a surge in purchasing may limit a surge in violence. But at the same time, we're sort of in this middle or post-surge period where firearms are already in the hands and the homes of people across the country. And so at that point, it's important to support safer firearm use and storage and address contributing risk factors for violence and incorporate a firearm violence prevention, multiple firearm violence prevention strategies into our pandemic response.
We're talking with Julia Schleimer, a research data analyst at the University of California, Davis Violence Prevention Research Program, about an increase in gun sales in America in March, April, and May as the pandemic took hold. And this isn't the only time that America has seen a spike in gun sales. And after the Sandy Hook shooting, one that we all remember, all those kids murdered in their classroom in Connecticut, how does this period compare to that period? Is that something that you can talk about?
Yeah, so just looking at the numbers, there have been prior studies that estimated a similar measure of excess purchasing during the post-Sandy Hook period. And specifically, a study in California found that in the 6 weeks after Sandy Hook, there was an approximately 50% increase in handgun acquisitions over expected. And our estimate is that, as you mentioned at the top, there was a 64% increase over expected nationwide during this period. So that does suggest that this increase is a bit bigger than the increase that followed Sandy Hook. Similarly, there was a nationwide study in the post-Sandy Hook period that estimated about 3 million excess purchases over a five-month period post-Sandy Hook, whereas we're looking at a three-month window in this paper. So, you know, taking that absolute number comparison with a little bit of grain of salt seems like this current surge is unique in magnitude. And it also seems to be unique just in what we know or what we can hypothesize about the context in which the surge is happening. So, as I mentioned previously, many have theorized that prior surges have been a combination of people being motivated by, the belief of impending restrictions on gun access or use, in addition to potentially concerns for self-protection and safety. It seems like this current surge is more plausibly motivated by the latter, by that concern for safety and desire for self-protection. So we're not only observing increases in firearm purchasing, but we're observing increases in firearm purchasing for potentially unique reasons and in a unique time where there are also increases in trauma, economic strain, and a deepening of racial and economic inequities, for example.
Julia, the Washington Post wrote about your study along with a similar study from the Brookings Institution. And I just want to read the concluding paragraph of writer Christopher Ingram at the Washington Post. Taken together, the findings paint a particularly bleak picture of the United States in 2020, reeling from a pandemic, an economic downturn, and a national reckoning with racism and police brutality. Many Americans are choosing to arm themselves in the hope, perhaps, of protecting themselves in the event that circumstances get worse. He goes on to write, the research suggests that at least some of the spike in gun purchases is driven by racist beliefs and attitudes among white Americans. And while many new gun buyers are motivated by wanting to secure their safety, the research also suggests that every gun purchased is a step toward a more violent society. So, Julia, those words are much more harrowing than anything we'll find in the database report that you put out. So I just want to ask, you're a research data analyst, so a lot of this can be somewhat difficult to understand as it relates to terminology and methodology for someone like me who's not in your field, but what should the general public expect to take away if they were to read this report that you put out? Is it similar to what Christopher Ingram writes at the Washington Post?
Great question. As you mentioned, I do think that, you know, the Washington Post article was a great article, and it takes our study and the Brookings study and other studies in context in the larger climate that we are all living through right now. And, you know, goes into it, making, you know, inferences and trying to understand the nuance of what might be happening. We are, you know, stick a little bit more towards data, and we have, so we do not have data on who is buying firearms. We do not have data on who is dying or being injured by firearms yet. And so those two things will be, I think, very important in disentangling these ideas that are being, you know, put forth right now, which are certainly plausible. And the Brookings report looked at a measure of racism where they looked at, I believe, Google searches for a racial epithet and used that as a measure of racism and tried to see a correlation between firearm purchasing. And they did find one. And so I think that is limited, but, you know, supportive evidence of there being some relationship between racial tension and purchasing and potentially firearm violence, although it's really going to take more data and more analyses to disentangle that in, you know, in a way that's supported by the data.
Julia Schleimer is a research data analyst at the University of California, Davis Violence Prevention Research Program. Julia, thank you so much for the time you gave us and sharing some thoughts on this research that you conducted. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.